Welcome, welcome everyone to the So You Think You Can Dance Rehap Up. My name is Lita Brillman. I am joined, of course, by my lovely co-host, Kelly Bedard. Kelly, how are you?
I'm good. I hear you're on the road this week, Lita.
I am on the road. I am currently in Las Vegas with my American Ninja Warrior co-host, Taryn Armstrong. We have been attending the tapings of the season 9 finale of American Ninja Warrior. So we have been up all night, two nights in a row, but I have, of course, not neglected my duties to cover So You Think You Can Dance. I could never.
She's a keener. That's follow through right there.
Yes, indeed. So we have some more LA auditions to get to.
We have LA auditions of what Kat tells us is the best dance show on television, Lita.
No question about it. Yeah, they are getting a little insecure. I think World of Dance is really threatening them.
Oh, yeah. My note on this is literally just OMG, relax.
Relax. They all need to calm down. They are fine. I wonder if So You Think Dance is maybe like if they're worried they might be in a little ratings danger or something.
Probably. I don't know. Everything's in ratings danger these days.
Yeah, that's true. But the opening montage is to a little mix song, so I am already very in on this episode.
One of my favorite bands.
To a song by the band Little Mix. They do the opening montage to that, which is always good.
I don't know anything about music. We're going to discover this along the way, everyone, that I don't know anything about music. So back in the day, all the contemporary dances were to Celine Dion songs. This I understood. These days, all the like cool hip things, I'm just like, who are you talking about? I've never heard of that person.
Well, So You Think You Can Dance was extremely instrumental in my music taste, because when I was watching it when I was like in middle school and didn't really have my own music taste, I would just go onto iTunes and download every song that they danced to. And that was my whole iPod.
I definitely did that. I had a playlist called The Dancing.
The Dancing.
That has all of the great, but then I quit after like season 2. So it's like mostly Celine Dion and that one Annie Lennox song.
Oh, yes. Tell me why.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Allison and Ivan did the contemporary, too.
Exactly. It was like a definitive moment on the show.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's still responsible for a lot of my music taste. I went and downloaded Dance Dance by Fall Out Boy after Ashley and Dimitri did that horrible doll routine to it. And they remained one of my favorite bands for 10 years. So.
Wow.
Here we are. Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay. So we're starting with a montage of Lita's favorite band. That's awesome. Okay.
Yes. Just taking you through my whole adolescence as guided by So You Think You Can Dance.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yes. So at the top of the show, I do just want to say we did get a comment from a listener telling us that the rules for Vegas/the Academy did change last season during the children's season that we unfortunately missed. And from what I understand, there's some sort of coach system happening. So I am interested in seeing what's going on there.
Oh, yeah. Somebody mentioned that on Twitter that all of the all-stars, although that seems like a lot to me. But I think there were only four all-stars last year, one from each major genre of dance. And then they picked like five people each and then lowered it down to each have a finalist, almost like voice style. I don't know that that's right, but that's what I heard on Twitter.
Yeah, so we are sorry we are not prepared to explain this, but it is good to know that that's when it changed over from you're going to Vegas to you're going to the Academy. Some rules changed as well.
You know what? I was thinking about this. I don't like this whole Academy thing. I understand that it worked last year with the kids, but there's something infantilizing about it. Like, I don't love this idea of like sending well-trained professional adults to the Academy.
I think even though they're all about the age where they're entering college anyway.
Some of them are, but some of them are like 27, and it's just it feels weird to me. And I would rather, and also no one calls it, like, there is no university in the world that's called the Academy, right? Like, that it's like a very elementary school, even high school thing. I don't know. It strikes me as strange, and I prefer things like boot camp or whatever else they want to call it, but even something like the training center, but there's something about the academy that I'm like, it feels a little condescending. I don't like it.
Anyway, yeah,
that's my hot take on the academy.
Yeah, well, we will see how we like the new format. I can't imagine I'm going to like it better than the old format because I loved everything about that whole week of television.
Yeah, you love watching people be tortured and stay up all night and fight.
I really, really did. And I'm sure that they will still be tortured, but it was just the most reality show-esque portion of that show. Because you had people fighting with each other and had people forming real friendships as they stayed up all night in these group work things. So
yeah, you did get sort of alliance structure happening for that one episode. And alliances, as we know, are the
you had a sort of
alliance structure forming in that one episode that only really lasted one episode because there's no chance for an alliance after that. But that is like those are the fundamentals of reality TV right there. The idea of an alliance. So when it comes to group rounds and things, that's and there people be like voted out of their groups and all sorts of fun reality TV drama.
Yes, I'm hoping we still get plenty of crying, though. I'm sure we will.
Well, at the very least, we'll get lots of Mary crying because the girl is emotional.
Yeah. Yes. Well, there was one point where I was like, ugh, this is going to make Mary cry. And then I started crying. We'll get to that. but I don't know. I understand, Mary. There are certain things that I don't relate to when you cry about it, but I understand dance making you cry. So let's get right into it. First up, we have Tristan and Jensen from Provo, Utah, home of the great Tyson Apostle.
Oh,
yes.
So my first note on them is that their names rhyme. Which is
Tristan and Jensen. Yeah, it's kind of a slant rhyme.
Yeah, sort of. So I wonder if that was like their dance teacher when they paired them together as kids, just being like, this will be funny.
Well, allegedly, she asked him to dance when they were in dance class.
That's so cute.
When they were like 11 and 12.
I'm so into this childhood dance partners narrative. Like it reminds me of Julianne Hough and Mark Ballas, which is one of my like favorite subplots of Dancing with the Stars. I think it's so cute. And I like you just know that she was like the love of his life when he was a kid.
Yeah, except now he's extremely defensive about it. Nigel is like
totally lines up. I think you're not that defensive if you weren't madly in love with her.
Yes, I have. I think he doth protest too much. In my notes. Where Nigel is like dance partner is like anything more going on, and he's just like no, what, no, ew, gross, girls.
I believe that the direct quote was no.
And
which is exactly what I would say if you asked me about the right crush. So, like, yes. Come on.
And she has a relationship with someone else on the show who is not her partner. She is Lindsay Arnold's sister. And this makes a lot of sense and was funny because when I first saw her, I was like, oh, she's from Utah and she looks kind of like Whitney. And then once they said, because Whitney is also from Utah, and once they said that she was Lindsay's sister, I was like, oh, yeah, they literally have identical faces. It's just that their face shape is different. So I didn't see it instantly. But yeah, they look exactly the same.
Yeah, I don't know. They definitely do look the same. I actually don't think she's going to make it.
No, I agree with you.
I don't think she's as I don't think she's strong enough in general. And I specifically don't think she's nearly as strong as Lindsay, who is one of the best ballroom people they've ever had.
Right.
Who's gone on to a tremendous career of being a losing finalist in Dancing with the Stars. She's a losing finalist every year. I didn't think that the dancing here was that strong, especially from her. I think he's quite charming. I think he might do better than her. And that's going to be in what I'm going to call a Hollywood week, but I don't know, Vegas week, Academy, whatever, that thing. I feel like that's going to be one of our big stories. You know how there's always like a you'll never believe who got cut. And it's someone that we're supposed to know, like the year that they cut Katie's roommate or something. That was like a big story. Do you remember that Katie from season 4, who's like one of my favorite
I know dancers. Katie, I don't remember her roommate.
When she auditioned, she came on with her best friend roommate person, and they were the final two to be picked into the top 20. And they asked them if they'd come back. And her roommate said absolutely, and Katie said no. And then Nigel, they basically gave her this crazy villain edit because she said she wouldn't come back if they didn't pick her, which I think is understandable.
Yeah.
And but they picked her anyway because she was the better dancer. And then the next year, there was this whole narrative about her roommate actually did come back, but then she didn't make it past the sort of the middle rounds of Vegas week. So I think that's what we're going to get here with, Jensen's the girl, right?
Tristan, yes. Jensen. Tristan is the boy.
I don't know. So Jensen, I think that's what's going to happen here. I think she's going to be the story in the academy of like, and Lindsay's sister got cut. Can you believe it?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not that common that my eye is drawn more to the male partner in the ballroom couple. But I really, and I know that the judges were saying that they couldn't stop looking at her because she was wearing a bright dress, and she's a good performer. She has all of Lindsay's sex appeal and performance ability, but absolutely none of the cleanliness. My jaw dropped at a certain point when like they did that spin on the floor and it was so messy. Everything about this was so sloppy. There were missed connections. She was moving on to movements before she finished her first movement. She wasn't following through. It was shocking. I really thought that growing up in the same household and presumably similar dance instruction to Lindsay, she would be much, much better than this and more prepared.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I do think she was probably nervous. So some of that stuff where she's getting ahead of herself does point to that. You're right. I don't think she's nearly as good. I think she's definitely got a little bit of that sort of secondary sister phenomenon going on where she's always trying to live up to this person. And maybe she's not really supposed to be a dancer, but she's following in her sister's footsteps and maybe she shouldn't. But I also do wonder, they talked about they used to be dance partners when they were kids and they came back together just for this. I wonder how long they've been rehearsing together. Because if they sort of threw this back together and hadn't really been working together for much of a lead up to this, it's possible they're also just not in tune with each other anymore and they needed to rehearse more before showing up to audition.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. So the judges, they love Lindsay. And I wonder if maybe their kind of Arnold family blinders will carry her further than she should go. But I just don't see her in the top 20 on Merit alone. I would be shocked.
I honestly think that their Arnold family loyalty has already carried her past where she should go. I think she should have absolutely gone to choreo. It's very possible she would have gotten through choreo because she's an experienced dancer who's done choreography before. But I do think she should have been sent to choreography instead of going straight through. And there is definitely that sort of Arnold family like loyalty. And also Nigel's producer side is showing, right? He's doing, oh, this will be a narrative we can follow story-wise in the following weeks, so we have to send her through. And I do think that happens a little bit in these early rounds. It's not entirely merit based, which is too bad.
We shall see. I don't know.
I want to see how far she can get with them absolutely refusing to bring up Dancing with the Stars.
Yes.
Like, how many times can we interview Lindsay and tell her not to talk about her job?
Yes. Very true. So next up, we have The Strangest Thing I've Ever Seen on So You Think You Can Dance, maybe. And we have Cody Astrenga, and he is a three-time horse riding champion of some kind where he is on an obstacle course with on a horse and he shoots things while riding the horse.
The South is so weird. This is a sport.
Yeah, I'm sure it has a name that he said, but I did not write it down. I have never heard of this. Texas is truly a foreign land to me.
Yeah.
So he says that this isn't his true passion. His real passion is dance. And then we go to this strange Western film where they spend so much time on this. And he's like entering a duel and then he takes off his shirt and it's like a belly dance outfit.
Couple thoughts. First of all, in that movie trailer thing, we get one credit. Apparently, this film is made by Nigel Lithgow, which I see as doubtful. But my main takeaway there was Nigel has a PhD. because they called him Nigel and then PhD OBE. And we knew he had an OBE because, which is the British order, because he got that a few seasons ago and like had to take a week off from the show to go and receive the commendation from the Queen. But he has a PhD in what? Like tap dance?
I have no idea. I saw that and just like thought it was a joke or something because I didn't know what OBE stood for. Good knowledge on that. I don't know.
That's the sort of about thing you this. Know if you're Canadian.
I see. That makes sense. So I just didn't even catch that. I just Googled it. I don't know if he actually has a PhD.
Oh, well.
I'm not seeing anything come up for this.
Okay. Well, according to the film credit, he does. I thought this was cute. It was obviously unnecessary, but it was cute. I really liked, in my notes, I referred to him as Cowboy Cody. I decided to dispense with last names and give people nicknames instead. I thought he was hella cute.
He
was kind of delightful. And I also thought that this was yet another, although probably our biggest this season thus far, of being like pretty gender normative when it came to our reaction to the belly dancing.
Heard that.
Yeah, right? Like everyone would have thought this was the coolest thing if this was a girl. But because he was a boy, everyone thought it was funny. And that really bothered me in that way that things always bother me. But I loved that everybody laughed at him and he was prepared for everybody to laugh at him. He knew it was going to happen. He lives in the world and experiences this all the time. And he just completely shut it down with a really quite moving, although very normal, story about growing up and taking solace in Britney and Shakira. And he just faced their laughter with a totally earnest, honest reaction. And everyone was just like, oh, right, human being. Gotcha. Gonna stop laughing at you now. It was great. I liked it.
Yeah. And the gender policing in this scenario particularly was like not appropriate because he was talking about how like this whole horse riding, shooting guns in Texas thing was to compensate for his kind of lack of masculinity and how he was bullied for that when he was in high school in Texas and how he kind of did this thing that he wasn't really passionate about when really he just wanted to dance just to compensate for that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a really toxic reaction to have. And I know that it's knee jerk and they didn't mean to. And they're not, if they were conscious of it, they wouldn't have done it. But that's exactly the sort of thing we need to point out because they need to be more conscious of it.
Yeah, they do. And they do say that he has the deadliest hips in the West. I really do not want to gloss over that. That's amazing. And I believe it.
They lie. I don't think they lie. I think they're deadly and they never lie.
They are truthful, honest hips. And I just love his attitude. And this was actually surprising because in the package, he didn't come off as he did in person. I don't know. I thought that he was going to be like this cowboy, super masculine, like dude. It didn't come through in the package, his personality.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that they really were into sort of like the kid with the violin last week where they were just like, ooh, you have another skill. Let's talk about that skill for no reason. They were just like, ooh, you ride horses. That's neat. And didn't really find the sort of interesting dichotomy of his personality and his horse riding thing. They didn't find that as interesting as we did, which is too bad. I don't know. I thought I loved him. I thought he was so cute.
I did too. And the MIA song was giving me life. And I feel like he should have gone to choreography. Yes. They all comment on his courage and his lack of training. They could have been more patronizing about it. I feel like sometimes when they comment on people's courage for coming out here, it's a little condescending. So they did an okay job with that. But I just don't understand. It can't hurt to send him to choreo. I feel that's like he showed something. He showed some technique and at least his belly dance technique was good. It's just that they, I don't think, knew what to make of this hip hop belly dance fusion thing. And like, because he shook his butt, that automatically like delegitimizes what he did.
Yep. Yeah, I absolutely would have sent him to choreography. I think, as we talked about last week, erring on the side of generosity with choreography is the way to go. There is not a limit to the number of people you can send. Mm-hmm. And I think that you don't want to miss out on somebody. And I think actually we did see a bunch of people go to choreography who should, well, not a bunch, but specifically like two people who should have gone, shouldn't have gone to choreography because there was no way they were going to be able to do it. They were sort of like gimmick dancers, people with the disjointed thing. I don't know the words or anything, but yes. They were quadruple jointed. But he, I do think, showed at least a possibility that he might have been able to do it. And I liked him and I would have liked to see him continue. Alas, this was frustrating for lots of reasons.
Yeah, and especially because they spent so much time producing this whole segment.
Yes.
This movie produced by Nigel Lithgow.
I will say, though, this was my first big moment of like, I like Vanessa Hudgens. Like, I don't dislike her in general, but I thought she did a really good job. She was very kind and supportive here. And I think she's going to be good. I'm open-minded about Vanessa. Here, she impressed me.
Okay. We're starting to be in on Vanessa. We will track this.
Yes.
So next up, we have Sade Kinu Austin. She's 21 and she's from Brooklyn. And her dad is Buddha Stretch, who used to choreograph for Michael Jackson and Mariah Carey. And her mom was a dancer for Mariah. And this is really cute that I'm sure that that's how they met. And that's adorable that they're just like this dancing duo. And now they have a child who's a dancer.
Yeah, that is super cute. First of all, I believe even though it's spelt Sade, I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Sade.
Sade, good call.
Or Sade. I'm not sure where the emphasis goes, but it's I wrote down pronounced Shaday. So something like that. She was fine. I think that at some point Nigel's going to call her the next Comfort. She's a very good dancer. She's going to be in the top 20, blah, blah, blah. Again, we brought this up last week. I think it's telling when someone has a good parent story and that parent gets pulled up. Sometimes I think it means that the person themselves is not necessarily that interesting. I mean, it was adorable seeing her dance with her mom. I don't know that I needed to see her mom dance, you know, whatever.
I would have loved it if her. Yeah, I would have loved it if her mom got up there and then just like busted it out. It was just like incredible. Yeah. Which I understand you can't necessarily just like do that, just go up there and like do a bunch of jumps and turns, but that I would have loved that because she is a dancer.
Yeah, it also wouldn't have been like that smart or kind of her mother to do, because if she shows up her daughter, then her daughter looks like a word. And her daughter's a great dancer. So for her to, it would be too bad if she got overshadowed. I don't think she did, but I do think that if you can't, I don't know. And this is the producers too. Like, this is not her call, but I'm always a little bit wary of someone who has like they pulled up a parent or their kid or some little funny thing that Nigel does during their audition instead of just like watch them dance, talk about how great of a dancer they are, and talk to them a little bit, because I think that's more of a testament to someone who's going to really pop on screen in a context that doesn't allow them to have this other stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. And Nigel even gets up and shakes his booty a little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which we totally needed to see. But she's fun and energetic. She's doing something a little bit different. So I'm in on her. I'm hopeful.
Yeah. No, I think she'll be in the top 20. I think she's an excellent dancer, but whatever.
We'll see. And obviously she goes straight through.
Yeah, absolutely.
No discussion.
The next thing we got, I will say, I thought was adorable and very weird, and I don't know why we got this, but this like weird cat interstitial about how it's too sunny.
She's like on a roof. It's bright out.
I think they've come to the conclusion that Kat is delightful when they just like let her be her. And so they keep in a lot of what would otherwise be sort of bloopery things where she just starts laughing spontaneously. Rather than giving her actual interstitials, they're just like, here's a little bit more Kat because you haven't seen her in a while. So this totally unnecessary thing about how it's bright on the roof in LA.
Yeah. And only Kat. Like, you're not going to have little moments of Ryan Seacrest doing this on American Idol. We just
Jeff, sporadic little segments of Jeff Probst being cute.
Those dimples.
Yeah, yeah. Just here's him cooking some bacon.
His character moments not quite as infectious as Kat Daly.
No. Yeah. We don't really care about who he is as a person and how he feels about the sunny LA rooftops. Yes. But Kat, sure. We'll spend 30 seconds of our lives watching her squint. That's fine.
Anytime. Yeah. So next up we have Matthew DeLock. He's 18 from Gonzales, Louisiana. He's been dancing since he was 2 because his grandma put him in dance classes and he would cry every day at dance class for like 6 years, which is a long time. And his grandma would say, you can cry all you want, but you're also going to dance. And I feel like I have told myself this exact same thing probably 100 times in my life.
And I think self-discipline.
I just think it's something that a lot of dancers have to say to themselves sometimes. And or any sport. Like, you can cry, you can scream, but you can't stop. You just have to keep doing it. And he is just absurdly talented. Like, to the point where Nigel out loud on his first turn says ridiculous. And I completely agree. He said that his record for turns is 17 in a row, which, like, I don't even know how you count that, but that is, I can't wrap my mind around this person. I was speechless during this.
So first of all, my big touchstone for pirouettes in a row, it just reminds me of the last, that last performance in Center Stage where she's just turning forever and then the curtain falls.
I have not seen that.
What?
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
This is a film?
This is, I think you're too young is all that happened there. You've never seen Center Stage and you're a dancer and you've never seen Center Stage?
No. I've seen Step Up like 100 times.
Oh, no. Step Up was trying to be Center Stage, but like for more mainstream audiences. Like if you're a real, like a dancer person, like someone who loves dance. Center Stage was a movie that was made in, I want to say, like 2002. It was the, I believe, the first movie role for Zoe Saldana. And it was amazing. It was about ballet dancers at the American Ballet Academy. Peter Gallagher from The OC was in it.
Yes.
And it had like a cast of half actors who could dance and then half actual ballet dancers who are pretty bad actors. And that's really funny. Anyway, it's amazing. It's like a touchstone for anyone who even remotely likes dance. And it has these long swaths in the middle that are just like, here, we're going to show you an excerpt from John Cranko's Romeo and Juliet. Like, it doesn't make any narrative sense. Like, nobody would put this in a movie theater these days because it's like, we don't need 6 minutes of uninterrupted ballet, but we do.
I do.
So I think it's very important. That's got to be your homework. Watch Center Stage, because it's amazing. But there's a famous, at the end of it, there's a ballet. It's like a contemporary thing, and it ends with a character just doing, like, 27 pirouettes in a row and the curtain falls while she's still spinning. And that's what the 17 in a row made me think of her. Sorry, that was a long little
It's good.
But this guy, okay, so here my main thing with Matthew, first of all, such a testament to forcing your kid to do something they didn't want to do. This is how I felt about like piano lessons. My mom would always lecture me about piano lessons. When I was your age, I wished my parents sent me to piano. So you have to force your kid to do things because they don't want to do anything.
Yeah, my mom let me quit piano. She was too soft on me.
But if you had tried to quit dance as well, like you have to do something, I think is the thing, right?
Yeah.
This is the trick. So forcing your kid to do a hobby, I think is the thing. Because if he, by the time he started to like dance, he was too old to pick up dance because he, I think, was 12. But my other thing is he is our second 18-year-old contemporary guy. So I'm wondering him versus, I don't remember the kid's name from last week, but the guy who was absolutely mind blowing last week, the one who lives with his godmother.
Darius Hickman.
Wow. Yes, exactly. Good for you.
I have notes. I keep all my notes on the same document. I wish that was from memory.
That would be very impressive. Yeah. So I don't know that we have room for both of these people. In my opinion, I think Darius beats out Matthew. Mostly because, well, I thought Matthew had a bunch of, especially that first spin. He has some moments that were just absolutely breathtaking. I don't know that the stuff in the middle was as impressive. I don't feel he filled it out as well, but we will see. But I don't know that there's room for both of them.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I really disagreed with the judges here on their critiques. They give the critique that is sometimes very warranted with these super technical dancers about how they have all of the ability, but they lack kind of the performance and the connection with the audience. And I did not agree with that at all. I felt like that's just kind of a thing that they sometimes say to people who are like too polished or whatever. But this was the one where I really teared up when I was watching this. I thought it was one of the most beautiful auditions maybe I've ever seen. I don't know why it made me emotional. It was just so gorgeous. And I don't feel like it lacked the performance or the charisma or whatever they need from him.
Yeah, I agree. I think that that's something that they just say when they don't have anything else to say.
Yeah.
Which I find frustrating because I do think there were things to say if they were paying maybe a little bit more technical attention. I agree. I don't think he was lacking performance quality. I think they just said that to say something, and that's frustrating.
Yes. So obviously he goes straight through, and then we get a little montage of some other great contemporary dancers, Peyton Albrecht, Taylor Swift, and a woman whose name is Chelsea Huff, but I doubt she's related to the Huff dynasty.
But there's a great lineage of the name Chelsea Huff. On one hand, there's the Huffs, and on the other hand, one of the sort of original, really standout ballroom dancers. And I believe the first person to go over to Dancing with the Stars after So You Think You Can Dance was Chelsea Hightower of Bleeding Love.
Ah, yes.
So I don't know.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think that Chelsea Huff is she stood out to me, and I think she's someone we are going to see a bit more, despite the fact that she was lumped into a montage instead of showing us her first audition.
I was just going to ask if Bleeding Love is fits mandatory to reference that on every podcast.
Every single podcast.
Okay. I like Chelsea,
but it's iconic, and so it's going to come up every time. And also, it's like the only thing I ever think of for, I don't remember a single other Chelsea Hightower routine. So
I don't either, even though I remember really, really like it. Like, she was one of my favorites, but I don't remember any other routines she did.
Exactly. Whereas Bleeding Love is like, when they do reunions and stuff, they always bring that back. And it's considered the sort of like breakout Nappy Tabs routine, even though they had done No Air before that. And No Air, I think, is a better routine.
Oh my gosh, who is in No Air?
Oh, Katie and Joshua, greatest couple.
Oh, right, right, right. Yes, I remember.
Now, Katie is someone I'm going to reference like every
single time.
Every, not even just every episode, but like she's at least at two already this episode.
I'm sure I will do the same with Mark Kanemura.
Oh my God, yes, Mark. Also in Bleeding Love.
Yes.
There you go.
There's the reference. So, yes, that's an enduring legacy. She's a great name. Maybe it'll help her out.
Yes.
Next, we have In-young Dassie Lee from South Korea. She moved to America for this, even though she moved here like 2 years ago and is just now auditioning. But maybe she's tried before and hasn't gotten to the actual judges stage or something.
Yeah, you have to pass through the like producers first. Yeah. Maybe they just thought she was boring, which is crazy to me because I'm pretty sure this is the best female hip hop audition I've ever seen. I thought she was incredible.
Yes. And she reminds me of, and I should have looked this up beforehand because I don't remember her name, but there was a female locker a couple seasons ago who made it to the top 20 and was like cut somewhere before the top 10. But I loved her so much. She came in and auditioned in like a suit or something. And this is going nowhere because I can't remember her name, but she reminds me of someone that I loved from a couple seasons ago. And it was a very similar thing. And I love to see this style represented because sometimes hip hop can all kind of look a little bit by the numbers. And this was something different, and she says she was inspired by Dominic and Sabra, which is so funny to me because that's the most random winner I think you could possibly come up with.
She was a weird winner, but I will say Dominic, I mean, there's an argument to be made for Ivan, but Dominic was the first hip hop dancer on the show who really showed a lot of lyrical ability. Mm-hmm. Like Ivan, it was all about the growth narrative, and Allison helped him a ton. And he did that one Annie Lennox routine that blew everybody's mind. But Dominic was the first one who like lyrical hip hop was a thing he was able to do, specifically in this routine they showed with him and Sabra. Mm-hmm. And I think he was the first hip hop dancer who really was more than just a hip hop dancer. And I think that in over time, like he was followed immediately by Josh and Twitch showing up the next season. Yeah. So people forget about him. But that was a big deal when Dominic was on, and he was the first one who was really sort of doing that. So I understand. I also was just, anytime you can show me a clip from season 3, I'm happy. So yes. I love that season.
She dances to a remix of Big Spender from Sweet Charity, which loved the musical theater geek in me was just obsessed.
I mean, I hate Sweet Charity with every fiber of my being, but this, I just think it's a stupid book, and you can't get like, I'm sorry. I don't care how fun your music is, because there are a couple numbers in Sweet Charity that are just delicious.
Yes.
If the book sucks, that's too bad. Security is bananas. But I Big Fender is great. And this remix was so cool. And she did such an exceptional job of subverting expectations at like multiple turns throughout the dance. Every time you thought you were on to her, she would switch it up. I just thought she was delightful. I'm wondering about this visa situation, though. Who are all these people who are just spontaneously moving to the States without work permits? Like, that's not real.
I don't know. And it's so much to just like uproot your life. I wonder if all of these people saying that they came here or moved here specifically for this actually did, or if that's just how they get on TV.
It's so hard to get into the States. Like you have to have a job that basically like brings you over, and they have to prove that they couldn't have hired an American for the same job. Like they almost didn't get a visa for Evangeline Lilly to be on Lost because the border people were like, couldn't you have hired an American for this role?
My God,
it's actually really, really difficult to get into the States in general. And once you're there, to have like, you can't just work on a non-work visa. You have to have a work visa in order to do this show. So I completely don't understand what's happening here. Anyway, it needs to be emphasized that it's very difficult to get into America.
Yes, I believe it. And I looked it up so that whole tangent was not a complete waste of time. And it was Jessica JJ was the girl. Yes.
Oh, yeah. With the bun on the top of her head.
Yes. Yes. She wore a top knot all the time.
Right. That's what that's called.
Yes. So she was my favorite from that season. I think she might have gone out right at the top 10. But this kind of reminded me of that style. But anyway, yes, point completely taken about these people moving here.
Doesn't make any sense. Yeah. I do think, though, that Desi, I think she's very poised. And I there's something about the way she holds her hands and her extensions that I feel like it's possible that she's going to be really good at other styles.
Yes, I completely co-signed that. That was something I thought about as well. And Vanessa makes a very annoying comment, I think, about this, where she says that she was very feminine and also masculine, but she directly associates the masculine part with the actual locking and the feminine part with like hitting the sexy poses. And it's like nothing about locking or popping or hip hop in general is like directly masculine, and we don't need to do that.
Oh, there are. I mean, there are so many like really reductive things that can be said. Like, there's this idea that like hip hop is a boy thing and contemporary is a girl thing, and there's something feminine about the contemporary male dancers. And I'm like, excuse me, but the strongest like male athletes I've ever seen in my life are all ballet dancers.
Yes.
Like, just cut it out entirely. Like, that kind of stuff drives me absolutely crazy.
Yeah, and Nigel has a humble brag here about how he was Shirley Bassey's choreographer.
Yes,
he's like,
I saw that.
Just out of curiosity, was this version of Big Spender, was that Shirley Bassey? Just wondering. And she's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, I was her choreographer. Oh, so I was just making sure it was her.
I wonder if he was just worried that we're not really aware of his dance pedigree as much as maybe we should be on the show. Like, it doesn't come up that often.
Yeah.
I think anytime he has an opportunity, he's like, guys, professional dancer.
See ya. Yes. Remember when I did things that mattered in the dance world?
Yeah. Good name dropping from Nigel.
Yes.
He's ridiculous.
Get a nice loud bam from Mary Murphy.
Yes. I gotta say, the next person won my heart so thoroughly. I loved her. I want to be her best friend.
What did you love about Blessin Geraldo? She's 18. She's from Baltimore.
First of all, her name is Blessin. So just like right away, amazing. I just thought she was an incredible person. Like, I did not think she was that great of a stepper. First of all, Nigel's right about stepping. It is really only effective in a group.
Yes.
Well, not only effective in a group, but
most effective.
Certainly, it makes me think of, not to bring up Dancing with the Stars all the time, but Amber Riley and Derek Huff did a stepping routine for their freestyle the year that she won, and it was just the bee's knees. Like, it was so great. So I love stepping to begin with, but Blessin's not the best stepper, but I just think she's a cool person. I loved her energy. I loved when it didn't seem like they were even going to send her to choreography, but Nigel said, we'd love to have your team back. And she was so excited. Like, that was beyond her wildest dreams. And I love that. This idea of like, she wasn't advancing herself, but her team would get to come back, and that mattered even more to her. I think that's a real testament to her character. I think she's so cute. And I also think that this school that she goes to in Baltimore sounds amazing. And I'm so glad that she was able to promote it, because when I think of like a quality that makes a really great school, like a sort of game changing school, the biggest thing I think of is the fact that when a student comes to them and says, hey, I want to start a thing, if they say yes, that's such an empowering, amazing thing. And the fact that she started a step club at her school is so cool, especially when you think about like some of the realities of step and the sort of cultural associations. For women to be doing step is such a male dominated thing. Mm-hmm. So for women to do it, it's such a aggressive, powerful thing. And there's so much, so many racial politics associated with it. It started, I believe, in black fraternities. And it's such a cool thing for a group of like young women to get to do. And I just think she's so impressive for starting that and innovating it and bringing it onto the show. And I just love her so much.
Kelly, you're so knowledgeable about stepping.
Oh, this is ridiculous. This is actually ridiculous. There was an episode of Sister Sister where this is so true. So. First of all, there is this Amber Riley thing on Dancing Stars, but also there's an episode of Sister Sister, which was my favorite show when I was growing up. Like, just, I was obsessed with it. If we had to miss an episode for some reason, I would like throw a tantrum because I'm mature. But Jordan, who was delightful, he was Tamara's boyfriend, joined a fraternity on, they went to University of Michigan.
Oh, really?
They did. Yeah, because the show was set in, I believe, in Detroit. And they wanted, when they went to college, they wanted to move the show just far enough, you know, like Dawson's Creek. They all went to Boston. Like, you go somewhere nearby so that you can keep the other characters in the show. I believe they went to University of Michigan. Yeah. Let's all go to Columbia.
They all go to Columbia.
Some of them went to NYU.
And then transferred to Columbia.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, luckily, if your show is in New York, you can sort of do that. But I love yes. that, like, everyone moves to Boston from Cape Side. But so, yeah. So sister, I'm pretty sure they went to the University of Michigan, or they might have gone to like a fake version. But I think it was University of Michigan. And Jordan joins a black fraternity, and there's a whole step thing about him joining the step team and what that means. And then they do a performance at the end of the episode. And it's so cool. And stepping is really awesome. And really culturally significant. And it reminds me a little bit of the, it's called the, I always mispronounce it, the haka, I think, the New Zealand thing.
I don't know.
You know, when, have you ever seen, it's often associated with rugby, but they do it all the time anyway, specifically boys' schools, but lots of people in New Zealand, they do this thing that's from Maori culture, that's an intimidation dance.
Tia and Tamara Maori culture?
Oh my god, that was amazing. anyway, not to do like that, a cultural history of step dancing, but step dancing is that the coolest. Good. So I love Blessin, and I'm glad she didn't get through because she wasn't a good enough dancer. Yes. I clearly wanted her to be a great dancer because I just thought she was the best person.
And at least some people are going to choreography this episode.
Yes. Oh, she absolutely. Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, she absolutely deserved to go to choreography, at least just to see, just to try.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
So speaking of people going to choreography, we have two people whose style is triple jointing, which is just basically when they unhinge all of their bones, much like how a snake unhinges its jaw. That's what it looks like, but with every single joint in their body. And it's horrifying.
Yeah.
And they are both sent to choreography and neither of them make it. But I hope that we don't see very much more of this.
How did we get here? There is this idea in the last few seasons that someone who's just like double jointed is that's dancing. That's not dancing. I think it's might be Philip Shabib's fault. Or like the guy, there was another guy who showed up around the same time as Philip, who did this sort of thing. And it was that introduction of that fluid, like popping, but more specific. And I think he started with the like slight dislocation stuff. And then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And now all of a sudden that's dancing. My favorite part of this was Vanessa just said, I don't understand.
I don't understand.
That was my opinion as well.
Yeah. I'm glad that they montaged these two.
Yes.
But it was strange. Just jumping ahead, because no one that we actually saw made it through the choreography round. The only people that we saw that went there were these two triple jointed people and Blessin. It was strange that we didn't see anyone go to choreography and make it through.
Because there were 23 people who went through from choreography.
So you're going to show us just three and they're all going to not make it.
Although, you know what? Like, let's be honest about it. Anyone who goes to choreography, like, how many finalists had to go to choreography?
I was just thinking about this and I don't know, but I feel like there had to be some. I mean, Gabby didn't even make it to choreography her first time.
Really? Well,
do you remember this? This was her whole story. She auditioned and it was a no from everyone. And then she drove to a different city and auditioned again.
Oh, yeah. In the same season. That was weird. Yeah. That was so dumb.
Yeah. And this was one of the things that bothered me so much about Gabby winning, was that they spun it as this narrative of like, see, never give up. But if you don't have the resources, if you don't have the time and support and money to drive yourself across the country to audition in every city, then like you don't get second chances. And I felt like in a stage versus street season, to have a stage performer that was able to do that was not a satisfying ending to me. Nothing against Gabby. Obviously, you know, it's not her fault that she did what she could, but that was not a story that sat super well with me at the time.
That's an incredibly insightful comment. Like that sort of didn't even occur to me, but of course, right? Like a lot of dance success has to do with coming from a place of privilege, right? Like I was talking about this with, what's his name again? The really amazing guy from Darius.
I was talking about this with Darius, this idea of like, how is it possible this guy got himself to class and paid for class and was able to like, and again, to go back to Danny Tidwell, who worked at the studio and then was adopted by Denise Wall, who owned the studio. Like, somebody has to, especially with stage dancing, there's so much, you need such a big support system by both financially and just like people to drive you to stuff. That it is such a strange comparison, them to like a genuine street dancer who, taught themselves or sorry, my phone is going off, taught themselves or, and really like learned their craft on the street. It's a strange dichotomy to discuss.
Yeah. So I feel like because just based on that kind of story, I feel like there have to be finalists that did go to choreography. If there are winners who didn't even make it the first time they auditioned, I don't know who they are. It's not something that like they really highlight or track throughout the season. It's not like here's, this person in the top 20, they went to choreography when they auditioned because after you get through, it doesn't really matter. But I feel like it has to happen, especially with some of the hip hop dancers.
Yeah,
at least in the earlier seasons when they weren't taking hip hop necessarily, not that they weren't taking it seriously, but I think that there were times when someone would do a great hip hop routine, but they would still have to go to choreography to see if they had any ability to pick up choreo
all the time. I mean, that on one hand, hip hop, not hip hop dancers, but specifically street dancers like breakers and things like that. They generally have done less choreography in their lives than contemporary dancers. Usually contemporary dancers have also taken a hip hop class at some point. So I understand where that sort of prejudice comes from. But yeah, I don't know. I'm sure you're right that some of the, and actually ballroom as well. It's possible that some of the ballroom dancers have had to go to choreography. I don't know. It seems like a long shot to me that someone who's going to go really far is likely to have had to go through choreography. But at the same time, you're right. When you talk about Gabby, like sometimes these judges have a very, like they can't spot talent really. Like if you do the wrong choreography in your audition, they can't see past that. Like there's a lot of like with American Idol, a lot of it would have to do with song choice. And I'm like, if you can't spot a good singer despite song choice, I don't know what you're doing on this judging panel.
Yeah.
So sometimes they are a little bit short-sighted in terms of really spotting talent and seeing clearly who has the real potential. But I mean, Benji had to dance for his life fairly early in the Hollywood or in Vegas week. So I don't know. It's interesting. But 23 people who did not. And there have also been, I want to say this was Haley, but there have been a couple people who have gotten to the top 20 and specifically said on air, like, I didn't get a single bit of airtime before the top 20. I wasn't in. They didn't show my audition. They didn't show me in Vegas week. Like, I'm at a distinct disadvantage in terms of like voting at this point because you don't know who I am. So that's happened before. Maybe one of these 23 is our winner. You never know.
You never know. But next up, we have Dustin Payne. He's 25. He's from Georgia and he's a street performer in L.A. What did you think of Dustin?
He's very floaty.
He's a good glider.
Yes, I thought he was excellent. I really liked, I thought there was a lot of precision to his miming. I thought everything had the right weight and dimension, which is a very strange, a very specific thing to do, but also really hard. And I think that that's what a lot of dancers who do that sort of like physical comedy mime kind of thing don't do right is that sort of almost realism in basically the effectiveness of their mime. And I thought it was really good. And also that he was really floaty and I liked his hat. So
it was a very fancy hat, according to Kat. Yeah. So he is an animator, but he's kind of a more, this isn't like the most over the top version that we've seen of this kind of thing with the, acting out different types of things. He was driving a car, stuff like that. But Mary does comment on his dance vocabulary, which is, I think, important in this style because there's a lot of different ways that you can glide and animate your arms or whatever that we've seen before. And so to do something different with it is always good. He, I feel like, belongs in the crew with like Cyrus and those people.
Dragon House.
Yes, Dragon House. I feel like he should live there because this fit right in with their style of movement.
I love them. They're also all so charming. Like, we've never met someone from that house who wasn't a standout personality who just.
Right. And that's what I mean. This guy was like, he had the charisma and like a similar style and around the same age and stuff. I was like, I don't know. I feel like this guy should get in with those people.
You know what? After this show, I bet he does. Although you have to do something about his hair. They all have fun hair.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Was Fiction in Dragon House?
No, I don't think so.
No. Okay.
He did. This guy did have a sort of fictiony style. Did you see in the comments somebody was talking about World of Dance? Apparently Fiction is on World of Dance.
Sure. And this is what I was saying about this show was that I think that I am just more partial. And this is obviously a personal preference. It's nothing against the structure of the show. I think I'm just more partial to watching amateurs, which, you know, we've talked about is a very fraught term, but, you know, close to amateurs, at least do these competitions and having someone who's already been in the top four on a super popular dance show.
No
Fiction.
Yeah.
Oh, did they do the thing where there were two winners that season? Was that when they did that? Because Amy won.
Maybe. Yes. No, that was a two winner season for sure. Because it was also the year where the two ballet dancers won, which was my favorite.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I forgot about that just because Amy is from Michigan. So she's like from like my neck of the woods in Michigan. So she's someone that I just think about probably more than I normally would if I had just like seen her season. But yes, he did win season 10. You're right. I forgot that there were two winners that season.
Yeah. I also, my memory for like the later seasons is really, really patchy.
Yeah.
I didn't see season 6, but then there are all these other, I have specific people who stand out. Like, I remember Alex Wong and I remember Kent, but like what, I can never remember the name Lauren, the random girl who won that
Lauren
season.
Frederman.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes.
Is she from Michigan?
She's not, but I remember her dancing her boogie shoes routine with Kent really, really well.
That was Billy. Bell,
oh my God. See, well, there you go.
See, yeah, because I boogie shoes is one of my all time favorite routines. It's like, I love that routine so much. But I never remember her. I just remember boogie shoes. Anyway, we should stop talking about previous seasons, but I have a hard time. Like, I remember almost everybody who was in season 3, but I don't remember anything about season like 9.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. It just doesn't stick with you as much after you've been watching it for like 7 years and it's not as new and influential.
But Fiction definitely was one of the co-winners of his season. And now he's on World of Dance, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And I also think that I want to say Wikipedia told me that he won last season. Didn't he? Because they had the All-Stars were paired with. Like basically like The Voice where everybody has like a horse in the race. I want to say his kid won, so he sort of won last season.
Oh, Dancing with the Stars style.
Yeah
where there's like a pro.
Yeah. I guess.
Interesting. I wouldn't know.
I mean, that was all from Wikipedia, so obviously chime in on the comments if we're very wrong.
We are so sorry.
Yeah, sorry. We're talking about things we literally didn't watch.
Our knowledge is either like way too in-depth about something or we just don't know.
Yeah. Do you want another lecture on the history of stepping? This I can do for you.
Yes, we'll talk about more season 2 routines just over and over.
Season 2 routines, though. So if you are, as we said last week, like, I really think it's very important if you haven't watched the whole show, and even if you have, the best routines of the show are like fundamental. And we're going to talk about them because a lot of things that are going to come up when we get into the top 20 are going to have happened because something happened before them. Talking about this Dominic and Saber routine that got mentioned in Desi's segment is a perfect example of something that, like, that was the first lyrical hip hop routine There was the umbrella dance with Ivan and Allison, but like that was sexy one love. Of the first, it was like a breakthrough routine. Mm-hmm. And so that is really informed all of the things that came after, especially the whole Nappy Tabs canon. And we're going to talk about Nappy Tabs. So if you haven't seen Bleeding Love or No Error, like their sort of premiere dances, those are the sort of things you should go back and watch. They are only like 2 minutes. They're all on YouTube. And Lita has this long thread that we've been adding to all week.
Yes.
On her Twitter that has all of our favorite routines. We're going to keep adding to it where you can just basically get a curated list of all the things from the show's history that you should watch. So definitely head to Lita's Twitter to do that, because it's really the best part of the show, I think, is just going back and watching old routines.
Yeah, I'll try to, after these podcasts are released, like add another one so that it's bumped. And then also it'll remind me to keep doing it.
You should pin it. Do you have a, or yeah, unless you have a pinned tweet that you actually need.
My pinned tweet is currently the last episode of this that we released.
Oh, fair enough.
Want people to see that as well. But I will try to keep bumping it because, I mean, some of them are not the... They're just ones that I like, but I will try to add some of the more foundational routines to it.
And we did have a starter pack. We did have like a whole long conversation on this thread last week about like our favorite routines from season one, which is just totally arbitrary. But it's an interesting thread. I definitely recommend that you go take a look at that, because the history of the show is still very relevant to the show. And also the judges talk about it a lot. They're especially because of the all-star setup, Nigel especially will talk about, you remind me of so-and-so. Like, there is no way Shade doesn't get compared to Comfort at some point.
Yeah.
So you need to know who Comfort is. Also, just because for your soul, you should know who Comfort is.
Yes, you should.
Best.
Yes. I love Comfort. Oh, she's like my favorite that season. So, yeah. And then we actually, so obviously Dustin goes straight to the academy, and then we get to actually see a little bit of choreography around with acclaimed choreographer and creative producer TM Mandy Moore.
Did you know that she choreographed La La Land?
Never heard of it.
What? But there was a movie. It was a box office hit called La La Land, and it didn't win an Oscar.
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
And we're going to bring it up all the time, apparently, even though I gotta say the choreography in La La Land, not complicated.
No, it was not.
No, not her best work. And yet somehow the first line of her obituary to quote the West Wing, La La Land choreographer Mandy Moore, who did all this other excellent work. But we're going to talk about La La Land.
Well, the same thing happened. No one cares about this, but the people who wrote the song City of Stars, Pasek and Paul, they wrote a bunch.
Tony.
Yeah, they just won a Tony. They've written a bunch of incredible musicals, but they performed at my graduation from college because they went to the University of Michigan. And
best musical theater program in the country.
Yep. Heard. I was not in it. I don't know why I like said that. Like I was proud. but they were introduced as like Oscar winning, you know, whatever, composers for La La Land. And then everybody was like rolling their eyes. And I was like, no, don't roll your eyes at Pasek and Paul. They've done cool things. You just would have never heard of them because they're like off-Broadway musicals plus one very successful Broadway musical.
Yeah.
But this is what happens to La La Land people.
Yes. Yeah.
They're
true. Damien Chazelle is... It really bothers me, actually, that La La Land became such a thing, because I thought Whiplash was brilliant and I hated La La Land, and nobody remembers him for Whiplash anymore. Everybody's like, the La La Land guy. And I'm like, oh, man, poor Whiplash. Oh, well.
So sad. Let us know what you think about all these La La Land people.
Yes. Oh, and we're probably going to get like a La La Land inspired routine at some point.
Oh, I'm
like,
sure.
We're just going to get so much La La Land. But oh, well, what are you going to do? I'm happy for Mandy Moore and actually for Pasek and Paul. Right. Same thing.
Yeah.
And Damien Chazelle, whatever. Like if someone whether they get famous for their best work or not, it's great that this is going to open doors and she gets to have a title on the show now and all this stuff. So good for Mandy Moore. She's great. She's always been great. And I think she's a great person to do choreography and to do like the boot camp rounds in. Are we still going? Where is the Academy? Vegas, LA, wherever it is.
I don't know.
I think she's really tough, but really accessible. And I think she's a good coach. So there, she's setting them up for success, which I think is key here.
Yes. And so we see that Blessin is struggling and she's not going to make the cut. It's not shocking, but she and our triple jointed monsters go home.
Monsters. Such monsters.
So sad. But as you said, 23 more make the cut. We don't know who they are and we probably never will.
Yeah, they're going to be anonymous contemporary dancers. One of them
numbers 1 through 23.
Yes, one of them might make the top 20 and then talk about the fact that apparently they don't have a personality, because otherwise we would have seen them, because they I don't know, this was an interesting, I feel like there wasn't anyone in this episode who, oh, except actually Tristan and Jensen were kind of boring. She wasn't Lindsay's sister, we wouldn't have seen them. But there wasn't, the episodes are so short now. We're only really spotlighting like five dancers. And yeah, only one of them didn't go through. And I would not have replaced her in a million years because she was delightful.
We had the,
oh, no,
the
two,
Cody. Yeah,
Cody didn't go through. And I also liked Cody so much. So,
yeah,
you know what? These 23 people, I'm sure they're less interesting than Blessin and Cody. So that's fine.
It's a high bar to be more interesting than the best hips in the West or whatever he said.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah.
So that is our episode. We're going to New York next week for the auditions. Yay. Well, we aren't. The show is.
I don't know if there's actual statistical proof of this, but I just have a belief in my heart that New York has the best dancers. It's what makes logical sense to me. So that's what I'm excited for New York week. I think it should be good. I feel like a lot of the best dancers have. Well, mostly I just know that Danny Tidwell auditioned in New York. And that's what matters to me.
You know, when we started this podcast, I wouldn't think who is going to be name dropped the most times in two episodes. I don't think I would have drafted Danny Tidwell.
Oh, my God. No, Danny Tidwell is my favorite. So when season three happened, they do the tour. I went to school in Boston and the tour would stop at the Agonis Arena at Boston University. And I didn't have tickets to the tour, but I literally went with a couple friends of mine and stood like at the stage door and got pictures with all the season three cast. Mm-hmm. And so I have a big picture of me and Danny Tidwell. That's like one of my prized possessions.
I have to go.
A concert I didn't see.
I went to the tour every year for four seasons. I went for season four was my first one. And then I went through seven, I think. And I need to find and post on Twitter all of the pictures that I have with people where I'm in my braces, just like crying because I'm meeting these people and I'm like 13 and I'm wearing my tour t-shirt.
Oh my God. Yeah. See, we have a bit of an age difference because this was first year university when season three was happening.
Yes. I went to the season two and three tours, but at that point, we didn't go to the meet and greets. We didn't have a hookup yet. So I never got to meet. And, you know, I feel like this is something that I will never live down, but I never got to meet Ivan, who I was just absolutely madly in love with in a way that was really, I was maybe young enough for it to be cute when I was 11, but it was also sad.
Ivan. Oh my God.
I'd never felt those feelings in my heart before.
Whatever. I was madly in love with Benji, which will tell you everything you need to know about Ben.
Two types of people.
Yeah. There are the different strokes.
I was standing by my landline voting for Ivan as many times as possible every night.
No way. So it was you.
It was me.
Oh my. Well, just, you know, if you haven't figured out by now, everyone, my all-time favorite dancers on this show are Danny Tidwell and Katie, yes, whose last name I can never remember. So
I don't know either.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about them a lot. I just mention them all the time. Hip Hip Chin Chin, which is on that amazing,
that's in my thread.
Red is just, yes. Danny. Anyway, moving on. I'm gonna, but just be warned, he's gonna come up constantly.
Yeah, you'll just do it until people are so annoyed if they don't know who he is that they just have to Google him. Exactly. Exactly.
Just so they can follow along.
It's a public service that I'm performing.
Yes. So that is our episode. Kelly, where can we find you on social media? And do you have anything to tell us about in your world?
Social media, Twitter and Instagram are both at my Ent World. Yeah, Instagram is new, so I don't have that many followers yet. And I don't, there's only like 12 posts on there. They're mostly just like photos of playbills.
I'm so jealous of your life when I just see how much theater you get to see, especially Shakespeare.
Oh, you like Shakespeare?
I love Shakespeare. Here's a fun fact about me. I did competitive Shakespeare in high school.
No, really?
Yes. Yes, they're in Pittsburgh. There is, maybe they have this in other cities, I don't know, but in Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh Public Theater has, which is where I grew up. I live in Michigan now, but they have an annual Shakespeare monologue and scene competition that I did all 4 years of high school, where you perform a monologue or a scene and they judge you.
Right on. That's amazing. Yes. I was the president of the Shakespeare Society in university.
Incredible.
So cool, guys. my favorite. So I just got Instagram recently, and I had, if you're a Shakespeare person, you'll appreciate the story. I had my favorite interaction of all time. I was at Romeo and Juliet at Stratford Festival. And at intermission, so I usually try, and because I don't know, because our Instagram, like our Twitter, is a professional one for my website, myentertainmentworld.ca, where we do arts criticism and reviews and articles about film, TV, music, games, sports, books, whatever, everything. And I run the theater branch. And so I post photos basically of just like the playbill and my ticket, because I don't know what else to put on Instagram. And I usually do this at intermission because I'm always late for the theater, so I can't do it beforehand. And so I posted at intermission a photo of this Romeo and Juliet play or the program. And the photo on the cover is just like a really good photo. And so I just wrote hashtag hot. and the guy who plays Romeo is a guy named Antoine Yared. And he follows me on Instagram, and he liked it during Act 4, which, if you know Romeo and Juliet, is when Romeo has been banished to Mantua and he's off stage for the entirety of Act 4. But he's just like backstage at the biggest Shakespeare company in North America. Romeo is just like checking his Instagram. so that I tweeted, I was like, my favorite thing about social media is when performers like your intermission post during the show. And he tweeted back, "You caught me."
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was my favorite.
Incredible.
Thing. So don't tag things hashtag hot unless you want to get embarrassed by Romeo.
I would love to be embarrassed by Romeo.
Yeah, he's great. Good old Antoine Yared. So, yeah, follow me on Instagram because fun playbill adventures. And sometimes I go to like a food festival or went to Magic Men Live recently. That was exciting.
Is that what it sounds Instagram. Like?
It's exactly what it sounds like. There's an article about it coming to my website with some videos.
Ooh. So, I in Vegas now, they have billboards everywhere for a show called Thunder Down Under, which is in
Australians.
Yes. And I had never heard of this. It's like a Magic Mike thing, but they're all Australian, or at least are pretending to be Australian or something.
It predates Magic Mike. So I only know about them because they were on an episode of Project Runway, and everybody's complaining because they're like, I don't know how to make menswear for people who are shaped like this.
Yes. Yeah, I'll try to see if I can get Taryn to come to Thunder Down Under with me tonight. God.
Taryn would die at Thunder Down Under. Just die. That's amazing. We should probably stop talking about this. But anyway, so my social media is at my
dance related.
Lots of fun. Magic Mike or Magic Men Live is very dance related. So there's that article is coming soon with videos. You'll all be very interested, I'm sure. I also have that interview that I plugged last week that I can't tell you who it is in case it doesn't come through, but it's totally coming through, I believe. And it should be topical this week, next week, as a little bit of a hint. So that's reality TV related. If you're an RHAP fan, definitely want to check out myentertainmentworld.ca for that. That's sort of it. What's up with you, Lita? You're in Vegas posting photos of you with like amazing ninja warriors.
I am. I got to meet Jesse Graff and Megan Martin, as well as Drew Dreschel and so many amazing people. Everybody was just like there. It was wild. I was thinking about So You Think You Can Dance because I was like, there were a lot of kids there. And I was like, I just remember how much I was like shaking and crying when I met these people when I was like 12. And I was just so excited for those kids. And like, now that I'm 22, I like still was like nervous to talk to people, but I was like, I don't know if this is maturity or like a loss of childlike wonder that I'm not like shaking when I'm meeting these people. I don't know how I feel about that, but I was jealous of all the kids that got to be there and meet their heroes at that age. But it's been a really fun time. We've been out watching these tapings from sundown to sunrise. So I'm a little bit delirious for the last two nights, but we should have the USA versus the World special we just released. And then we have a really fun celebrity special that we recorded with a special guest that may or may not be Rob Sesternino. I don't know.
I just thought it was Stephen Amell and I got really excited.
He's on a celebrity special, right?
He is. Yeah, he was. He did very well. But yeah, so we have that should be coming out soon. And other than that, we're going to try to keep on top of it. We're behind because we've both been traveling a lot. But look out for those. We should have some fun stuff coming up now that we have some behind the scenes intel, even though we will not spoil the season, we promise. And you can follow me on Twitter at Lita Tweeted and on Instagram at Lita Grammed to keep up with everything that I'm up to, although I'm about to go back to my normal life after a couple weeks of really exciting trips. So that's sad, but it's fine. So keep up with me. Listen to my podcasts, please. They are fun and I would like to keep doing them forever.
And post in the comments. I almost always reply.
Yes, we had a very active comment section on our premiere episode, which was really exciting. I'm happy to see everybody engaging. And thank you, everybody who said something nice about this podcast. We're still new to this. So
we're very enthusiastic.
Yes. What we lack in experience, we make up for in passion and just deep trivia on this show.
Deep, deep trivia. Deep trivia. Except that I can never remember anybody's name from like season 12.
That's not deep. That's shallow.
That's true. I got the deep stuff down. It's the shallow stuff that I'm like, who are you?
I need to take some like Sporkle quizzes or something.
Yes. On these I sometimes reasons. Do that to make sure that I still can name all the countries in the world, because otherwise I feel like I'm
down. That's a much more useful talent. I just do Survivor ones.
I can't all do Survivor because I missed all the middle seasons, but I can do Big Brother. Mm. Anyway, definitely. Yeah. Stay involved in the comments. I'm a big replier, unless you say something mean, in which case I'm going to not reply for my own sanity. yeah. And engage on Twitter and all that fun stuff at my Entworld, at Lita Tweeted, all that fun stuff.
Yes. And thank you so much for listening. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
So You Think You Can Dance.